I'm Francine, bringing you more reviews, recaps, and rants on all your favorite K-dramas. This is Drama Buds, an anime podcast. So hello everyone, welcome to today's episode of Drama Buds. Let's get right into it. I feel like this is going to be a long one, so I might as well just go straight into my first impressions on Moving, the latest. Would I say it's a big blockbuster drama? Does that concept work for dramas? It's arguably the biggest release this year. Budget-wise, cast-wise, scale-wise, it's huge. And Disney has invested a lot of money into it. And I think it was a worthy investment. We'll get to all that later. Basic details. Moving has the same PD as Kingdom 2. The writer, Kang Ful, is the same as the webtoon writer. So he's the one who added new characters and more depth to the stories of others. This cast is huge. For the parents, we have Jo In-sung, Han Yo-joo, Ryu Sung-ryong, many more. And for the kids, we have Kim Jong-ha, Go Yun-jong, and Kim Do-hoon. The supporting cast is, to me, just a star-studded. I feel like every cast member here, I'm like, I've seen you before in this and that. Everyone, okay? Even if they only appear for like an episode or a scene. Huge cast. Very recognizable. So what is it about? It's about these parents who have superpowers, worked for the government as secret agents. But for reasons we don't know yet, although we can guess, as of episode 11, they left the NIS, the intelligence service, and are now hiding their children who inherited their powers. These kids end up in the same school where the development of the powers that they're trying so hard to hide are actually being monitored by the teachers who work for the NIS. And we also have this assassin with like regeneration powers who was sent by the US government, who is now hunting down former agents with superpowers, and he's trying to find the children, their children, knowing that their kids inherited their powers as well. So the first 7 episodes were released at once. And that first part focused on the teenagers with their parents in the background, growing closer as friends while discovering each other's powers. And then the next episodes are being released 2 at a time, focusing on the backstories of the parents, how they met, and probably how they ran away from the NIS, how we ended up in the present day. But I've only watched episode 11 as of now, so that's all I know about the story so far. I will spoil a bit. This is definitely not spoiler-free because I want to recap some of the things that happened. But this is mostly first impressions and why everyone needs to give this a chance. At the very least, you have to try it. So in episodes 1 to 7, we start out with the kids, right? How they discovered their powers and managed to hide it for so long. We have Bong Sok, played by Kim Jong-ha, who inherited his father's ability to fly and his mom's super senses. But unlike his father, Dushik, played by Jo In-sung, he can't control his flying. He just floats all the time, especially when he experiences strong emotions. His mom, Mi-hyun, played by Han Yo-joo, she ties weights on him, she puts them in his bag, she makes him gain weight to hide that so that it's, you know, it's harder for him to just float and to protect him from the NIS, not knowing that the teachers are already monitoring them for the government. She's really protective and strict with him, you know, about answering his phone, about being within reach so she could always, you know, tell him to run or tell him to not come home yet. And protect him. And that makes Bong Sok feel a bit smothered. And because of the weights, the literal weights on him that are tying him down, he is unable to access or use his power and try to control it when he really needs to or feels like he wants to. Next, we have Hee-soo, played by Go Yun-jong, a new student in that school who got expelled from her previous school because she fought like 17 bullies in one battle. And they all came out of it, you know, badly beaten, and she was perfectly fine. Because that's where she discovered that she had the power of regeneration. And this new school was the only school that would accept her. Obviously, because they know about the incident and think she definitely has superpowers. So they can monitor her. Side note, it's nice that there's a reason for these characters to meet. Because usually it's just a very convenient coincidence that, oh, they enrolled in the same school. But here, it makes sense that these two kids with powers, you know, end up meeting the same school because the government is trying to monitor them. So when they find out about kids having weird incidents, they find a way to bring them here. Yeah, just that's it. Small side note, I like that detail. So her dad, Juwon, played by Ryu Sung-ryong, he also has the regeneration powers. And they spent most of their lives moving from one place to another because he was so afraid of the government finding them and, of course, separating her from him or even killing them. And when he finally decided to settle down somewhere so, you know, she could finish high school, maybe have a normal life, that's when the fight happened and he used all their money to settle with the students and at least, you know, have Hee-soo continue studying elsewhere. And that's why Hee-soo now is so determined to train for this entrance test to become a PE major in college because, you know, she'd like for her father's sacrifices to lead to something good, to amount to something. And lastly, Kang-hoon, played by Kim Do-hoon, he's the class president and the only other character in the school who we know has powers. And I think his powers are super strength and super speed as well. We don't know much about him or his father, played by Kim Song-kyun. I don't think he's had his solo episode yet. What I find interesting about Kang-hoon is how he observes Bong-seok and Hee-soo, the only other students with superpowers that we know of, getting closer. And he feels like an outsider who wants to connect with others like him, but he can't for some reason. I don't know. How they're gonna bring him into this. I'm hoping they become friends. I don't interpret this as a, you know, typical love triangle. I just want them to be friends. They're all sweet babies, you know. Well, Kang-hoon is not very sweet, nor a baby. But, you know, I would like him to be a sweet baby. Anyway, so what I immediately loved about the first episodes that were dropped at once was that I don't think it was what anyone was expecting from a show about superpowers produced and released by Disney, right? You know what I mean? I saw this tweet that said, you know, it's not trying to be a Marvel show. It's not a bootleg Marvel show where it's about the young characters, you know, their coming of age, discovering their powers and using it for the greater good because they're the chosen ones, the hero of the universe. No, nothing like that. It's barely even about their powers. It's about their relationships with their parents, about the sacrifices that their parents made to protect their children, the feeling of otherness, that I feel different from others, that lessens when these kids find someone that's like them, who is also different and also special, right? And it's also about the danger that, you know, their whole life, they know they've been running from something or hiding from something because they're different, because they have powers. They know that danger is out there, but they don't fully understand how it's looming over them because of how much their parents have protected them all their lives. And I think the more comfortable they are in their current lives, in their relationships, in their powers, the more dangerous it is. I am looking forward to that. This theme about parents and sacrifice and all that, it's emphasized even in the backstories of the side characters. I can't really talk about Chateyun's Bongeman episode 6. That was my lowest rated episode in a series of like 9-10 star ratings. Didn't super care about him, but that aspect was also there. I want to talk about Frank, played by Ryu Sung-bom. He is the assassin that's, you know, hunting down these former agents, right? And we get his backstory in episode 7 and find out that he was sold by his mother to the US government to be taken into this program and trained to be a killer. Because he also has regeneration powers, right? And it's nice that came in episode 7. Because in earlier episodes, when he was, you know, doing the cool action sequences with the former agents trying to kill them, when he was trying to find out about the kids of the former agents that he was hunting down, he kept asking them or wondering, why do these people keep protecting their children even until they died? Why do they go at such great lengths to protect their children? Meanwhile, Frank never experienced that. Oh, Oh my god, is that not an emotional gut punch for a villain or for some dude who's been killing very cool characters this whole time? Oh my gosh, so good. Talking about the pacing, you'd think it's kind of weird that we're starting with the kids in this big chunk and then we go back to the parents and their backstories, right? In episodes 8 to 11. But I personally like this format because these kids are, I think, the emotional core of the show, right? They are the most important people to their parents. And in their backstories, we'll discover why the parents have such deep fears, why they went through such great lengths and are so desperate to protect their kids from the NIS. Now, episodes 8 to 9 focus on Dushik and Miyun, Bongsok's parents, and episodes 10 to 11 focus on Juwon and Jihee, played by Kwak Sun-yong, who are Hee-soo's parents. Let's start with 8 to 9. So, Dushik and Miyun met in the NIS when Miyun was assigned to get close to Dushik, kind of seduce him to find out if he had the mentality or the philosophy that would, you know, make him do this top secret mission. And actually, when I was writing down this episode, I wrote down like the blow-by-blow of the plot twists, but I decided, no, I want you to experience that. I've spoiled enough. That part, I'll leave it to you if you don't know. If you do know, was it that like a non-stop switcheroo moment? I loved it. I had so much fun. What's important about these two characters is that they are humanists, that they care about the inherent right of anyone to live, whether they're a spy for North Korea or not. They're willing to deceive the NIS and not follow their mission and act, you know, of their own accord to follow what they believe in. And, you know, in the sequence of her trying to get his attention and both of them subtly observing each other and approaching each other and interacting and opening up. guys, I love a good slow burn. You know me. So we see little details of their courtship and their initial meetings that are still in Miyun's life to the present day. Which means that, in a way, she is still thinking of him, waiting for him! Ah! Even though we don't exactly know what happened to Dushik after they had Bongsok and he grew up without a father, or he has very few memories of his father as a toddler, a really young child. So, oh, what happened? The next two eps are out by the time this is posted. So, oh, be quiet. But I'm very excited to see what happened. What tragic ending did Dushik face? We'll see. Anyway, next episodes, 10 to 11, is about Juwon. We meet him as the underling of a gang and he uses his regeneration to be a tank for their fights, to let people beat him up, and he feels nothing, right? And so he just mows everyone down. And he also uses his regeneration to scam people by pretending that they ran him over and then he extorts money from them. And Juwon's major character trait, motif, I don't know, one of those words. His major thing is that he has no sense of direction, literally and figuratively. Like, literally, he cannot find his way back to the motel. Like, walking around the neighborhood, he just loses his way. Figuratively, he is betrayed by his hyungs in the gang. And, you know, he doesn't have a purpose outside of getting beaten up and beating others up. He doesn't even live in a proper place. He stays at a motel and pays for it weekly with the money that he gets from scamming others. Like, this guy really has no plan, no direction in life. And literally and figuratively, it is Jihee who helps him find some direction. Like, literally, she tells him the way to get back to his motel, and his interest in her makes him clean up before he orders coffee from her so that they could talk. And by protecting her from these men who were in the same motel as him and he heard that they were trying to take advantage of her and assault her, he exposes himself to the gang that's chasing after him and to the NIS, who now recruit him to be an agent after, yeah, confirming his powers. And so with all of that, he's sort of found a direction in life, where he's following someone's orders again, like, that's good for him. He doesn't have the capability of making his own decisions. And he also manages to maintain his relationship with Jihee. Honestly, episode 10 was my lowest rated episode. Because, oh, that's a new thing I do, guys. I rate every episode and it automatically averages in my Notion. And that's how I decide on my final show rating. Notion tour someday? I don't know. Anyway, so episode 10 was my lowest rated episode. Because I didn't care about the gangsters. And a lot of the action in both episodes seemed like, how do I say, violence for violence's sake. Which, you know, makes sense. This is an action show that's part of it. But at some point, we get it, okay? Joon can survive crazy battles. He's super powerful. We get it. Like, I do not need to see this man dismember himself and others. Just to prove that. I've seen it once. That's enough. On a more understanding note, I respect the flex, right? I respect how they're flexing their budget and their production value and quality. I respect that, but a little too much for me. Episode 11, though, I loved it because of Joon becoming this cute little loser for Jihee, who he liked. That's it. There was still a lot of extreme violence for extreme violence's sake, but at least we had the cute moments to soften it throughout the episode. Now, as of episode 11, we'll see where their stories go. It's probably gonna be very tragic. And I'm waiting for that. I'm counting on that. But with these episodes, we see inklings of why they are the way that they are in the present. And can I just say, I love the subtle, sizzling slow burn of Dushik and Mihyun. I really do. But I also just love seeing a big, powerful guy become a complete loser because he realizes that he likes a girl. Which is what we got with Joon and Jihee. Like, can I just say that both of the parent romances are really satisfying every dynamic that I love? And also, if you know me, I'm also describing another ship that has both of these dynamics in one ship. If you know, you know. And if you don't, you need to know what my favorite drama is of all time. But yeah, you get it. As I was watching the first 7 episodes, I kept thinking to myself, there is no way that this could have been made and released on terrestrial TV, like in the local channels, in KBS, SBS, MBC, JTBC, TVN, ENA, all of that. I mean, that budget? It's massive. I don't have the exact numbers, but it's really huge. And it's very well used. It's not just for the huge cast. I mean, the cast, I'm sure, cost a lot of money. But the CGI, the effects, the music, everything so well made, so cinematic. The scoring is perfect as well. The camera work, the lighting, everything. Everything about it is just stunning to the max. Speaking of the cast, something I love about the show is that it genuinely treats all characters like they are main characters. So anyone who is coming here expecting it to be just about the parents, because they're the big names, I understand that. Or those who, you know, expect it to be just about the kids, because the show starts with them, and in the first 7 episodes, the parents are just in the background. If you're coming with those expectations on either side, getting more of the spotlight, you'll have to adjust your expectations. We are used to dramas with 1 to 2 male-female leads. But this is a true ensemble cast. Each of them will get their chance to shine and to tell their stories at their own pace. But the major reason why this would never get made on local TV is the pacing of the story and the episodes. If you try to release this in the typical, you know, 2 episodes per week schedule, I think many would lose interest week per week because there are so many threads floating around and we're not seeing all the leads that we're expecting a lot of screen time of. And the plot, I'm using air quotes here, however which way people define what the plot is, it's not unfolding immediately within the first 2 to 4 eps. We don't exactly know our villains all that well or we don't know how all the leads play into the story yet. And then working with the setup of the first 7 episodes being released at once, being about the kids, you know, when we've gotten used to the more character-focused pacing of that first part, suddenly, we're on a weekly schedule and we're focusing on the backstories of the parents. Like, if this were released on TVN, a Saturday-Sunday drama that everyone's tuning into, I don't think it would have been received as well. And actually, I still do see people complaining about this, complaining about it being all about the parents now, saying that, you know, it killed the momentum of the story and that they want the kids back. Okay, I will agree that I miss the kids. I miss the kids also. But I totally disagree with saying that it killed the momentum of the story because of literally everything I said earlier. Every aspect of this. That's why I disagree. This pace or format that they've chosen to tell this story makes absolute sense in explaining why these characters act the way they do. I'd like to argue that telling this in a linear way, starting with the parents and then going to the present day of the kids, I'd argue that that would be so much worse than what the format is now. Because imagine this, you would get deep into the stories of the parents, right? And then tragic things happen to them, and then suddenly we are introduced to kids that we're supposed to care about. And their silly little problems are now, you know, the most important thing. While, you know, the parents and the NIS and the villains that, you know, their conflicts seem so much grander and more extreme than what's going on with these teenagers, suddenly they're sidelined. But by telling the kids' stories first, we got glimpses of the parents' secrets. We know they're hiding something. And it built intrigue for them while we were getting to know these lovely, adorable children, these baby teenagers that they were risking their lives to protect. And now that Bong-seok is, you know, fighting back against his mom, he's done hiding his powers, he wants to hone them, we find out what Mi-yeon was so afraid of by learning about what happened to her and Dushik in the past. Part 1 introduced who they were fighting for. Part 2 showed us who they were fighting and why they fought back. I need to verify the source, but I heard that episodes 14 onwards would be about like the grand battle of the parents and kids versus the enemies. So I trust that it will all come together, right? And that it was necessary for us to know about the parents and their whole story in the past in a big chunk, which I would prefer rather than like bits and pieces scattered throughout maybe 14 episodes. I think I would lose patience with that versus just getting it in one chunk like this. The title of this segment or this part is bringing back the original magic of OTT dramas, or bringing magic back to OTT, because, you know, this is why streaming services and their original dramas felt so revolutionary at first. Because OTT dramas are an avenue for unlimited storytelling, paced however they want to pace it or however they need to for the story that they want to tell. Bit of a tangent, Masked Girl on Netflix kind of gave me that feeling as well, being more, you know, character focused and using, you know, the unreliable narrator that the episode centers on to kind of bit by bit tell this whole story about Masked Girl. It's a very interesting approach. I haven't finished it, so I don't know how it all comes together, but I found that interesting in a, you know, this is unique kind of way. Anyway, sorry, back to moving. Moving is not what I expected it to be, but it's so, so, so much better. Anyone who is hesitant to try this simply because it has superpowers, like just, you know, out of principle, I don't watch superpower fantasy shows like this. I just can't take it seriously. Plus, it's produced by Disney. What are they trying to do? Expand Marvel into the K-drama sector? Come on. If you've said any of those, I ask you to give the show a chance, get to know the characters and their sacrifices and secrets, and then decide. I think a lot of people are enjoying this because of the, you know, K-drama twist on the superhero genre, which a lot of people have, you know, lost a bit of faith in over the past how many years. The verdict is obviously I'm finishing this. Is that even a question? You think I would go through all this effort to not finish this? I'm in. I'm hooked. All I can do is hope that it ends well. But I have, yeah, just a little bit of faith. So that's it for me today. I don't think I've made a first impressions episode this detailed since my Liberation Notes. I don't think so. Or I'm really getting into the characters and what's happened to them. Okay. I am genuinely enjoying this. Look forward to it every week. Currently, it's second in my rankings this year. I'll give you like 2 seconds to guess who's on top right now. It's this and My Dearest. Every week, they're shifting on who's in top spot. But right now, My Dearest is edging it out just a little bit. But we'll see. Once again, last time I said that my K-drama slump was cured, I lied. I was hoping it was, but it wasn't. This time, I'm blown away by what I'm watching. I'm blown away by how much I'm enjoying this. So go watch Moving if you haven't already. And if you're already watching, I hope this recap helped you remember everything that's going on. I will now go watch the latest episodes. And I'm excited to hopefully come back to the present time and have it all come together next week. That's it for me today. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you soon.